And we would like to take this opportunity to make a few announcements. First of all, I'd like to report that the Board of Trustees meeting and the general membership meetings were quite successful, and I'd like to give you the report, especially to non-members, of the important decisions that were made. The new president of the Philadelphia Society is Margot Carlisle, and I think we should have a round of applause. And I'll read the other officers, and then we can appoint them. Gene Meyer as first vice president, Peter Brimelow as second vice president, Don Lipsett as secretary, David Stir as treasurer, and Dan Hales as assistant secretary. The new trustees elect are Dan Peters, Stan Evans, Ken Cribb, William Campbell, Anita Kirk, and Bridget Wagner. Two of the many distinguished members here today are Ruth and Pete Peters, and it happens to be Pete Peters' birthday, so I think we might give him a round of applause. The next two meetings of the Philadelphia Society will be the fall regional meeting, which will be held in Indianapolis on November 17th and 18th, 1995. And the next national meeting will be April 26th to 28th in Chicago. So you should put those down on your calendar. Now, many people have noted all of the various aspects of the November 1994 elections. One that we're still waiting on a vote count about is that of the president of Cook County Board. And we're going to have a report on those on that count. Some people were surprised that the first official count came in before the polls closed. But that's required by Chicago Municipal Ordinance, and we're waiting for further update from an expert on election law in the state of Illinois, and in particular, Cook County. Joe Morris, please.
Thank you, President Liggio, President-elect Carlisle, ladies and gentlemen. This is the ninth occasion, by my count, on which I have been called upon to deliver the annual address, Urbe et Orbe, on behalf of the Philadelphia Society. I'm delighted to be able to tell you that this is your last. I cannot tell you, however, that these nine reports have been consecutive. I missed last year's meeting of the Philadelphia Society in Chicago, not because I was out campaigning for president of Cook County that day, but because I took the occasion to get married. If it seems to you, and you in particular, that I spoke last year, however, you're right, in a sense, because thanks to the clever planning of Ed Fulner, I spoke Thursday night last year at the dinner meeting of the Heritage Foundation's Resource Bank. And in that speech, I did indeed discuss the peculiar characteristics of politics in Cook County, Chicago, and some 125 or 30 suburbs. I'm very proud of my community. It is a civil society, as defined by Burke, a compact among those who are living, those who have gone before, and those who are yet to come. And in Chicago, they all vote. Jeb Bush is not the only Republican who lost in 1994. But I think we scored some important victories in that effort in Chicago last year, trying to make the case for conservative government at the local level. And that's a case I think we'll be making again and again. However, because I was not in town for the Philadelphia Society meeting proper last year, I missed the extraordinary discussion sparked by John O'Sullivan and Peter Brimlow over the question of immigration, the role of immigrants, the definition of American society. I don't want to reopen that debate here today. Let me simply say that it is my view of John O'Sullivan, originally from Britain. I'm not sure originally whether Greater or Lesser Britain, but one of the two is Anglo-Irish. It's tough to peg. Peter Brimlow, of course, from Canada. One might say of them, as Ed Fulner quoted Don Lipset last night of saying of Signore Martino, or as one might say, for example, of that new American citizen, Signor Chafuen, Peter Brimlow and John O'Sullivan are both great Americans. Well, by virtue of being here in Philadelphia today, I am missing the home opener of the Chicago Cubs. But, you know, I have to say, I am a little irritated with the population of baseball players as a result of the recent unpleasantness. And I think to myself, you know, why pay? Why pay to go watch a bunch of petulant juveniles who have gotten rich and fat, sucking up the public's money? They're owned by the Chicago Tribune. I mean, if you want to see those people strutting, you know, on some playing field when they're not out using their ill-gotten gains chasing drink, drugs, and women, why bother to spend your money going to Wrigley Field when you can see the same thing in the Chicago City Council for free? It is heartening to see, however, that municipal reform is possible. As others have adverted, it is a remarkable return of Mayor Marion Barry, and I think we can all take heart from his commitment as mayor of his city. Having seen the light, experienced it firsthand, he has pledged to the people of Washington, D.C. that he will get drugs off the streets, even if he has to do it himself, one gram at a time. By the way, Stan Evans this morning brought us some news from Washington. There is some other hot news I'd like to share with you. The Treasury Department has announced this morning that the BATF is changing its name to the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Fertilizer. And in really important news for the conservative community, I'm delighted to report that just this week, Strom Thurmond's third wife was born. He is a clever fellow. He is a clever fellow, this President Leggio, who has organized this meeting around the organizing principle that each session should push a book. And we pushed Stan's book in the first session. We're pushing a couple of other books later today. I have chosen, inspired very much by the panel this morning, I have chosen as the book that I propose to push today, the owner's manual, the Bible itself. And you certainly have to wonder what kind of advance was involved in that. So let me turn for a moment to a biblical theme. See, there was this priest and this rabbi. And they both served a small community. They were very good friends, and it came over time to be their custom that on Sunday afternoons, they would go bicycling together in the lovely country lanes near the town. One Sunday afternoon, the Reverend Father was out on his bicycle pedaling along, and he came upon the rabbi on foot. And he said, "Rabbi, where is your bicycle?" And the rabbi said, "Well, you know, it is a strange and sad thing, but I believe my bicycle has been stolen, and I think it's been stolen by a member of my own congregation." And the priest said, "Well, you know, a few years ago I had a problem very similar to that, something I thought was stolen and in my own congregation, and I'll tell you how I got it back. The following Sunday, I delivered a homily on the Ten Commandments. I walked down each one of the Ten Commandments. When I got down to Thou Shalt Not Steal, I described my own loss, put a little guilt out there, and sure enough, the next day, what I had lost was returned to the rectory, no questions asked. Try it, Rabbi, it might work." Well, the following Sunday afternoon, the priest is riding along the lane, and along comes the rabbi back on his bicycle, back in the saddle again. And the priest said, "Well, Rabbi, I'm glad to see you recovered your bicycle. Was my advice of any help to you?" And the rabbi said, "Oh, my goodness, yes, Father, it worked perfectly. Yesterday, in the pulpit in the synagogue, on Saturday, I delivered a sermon. I delivered it on the Ten Commandments. I went down the Ten Commandments one by one, and when I got to, 'Thou shalt not commit adultery,' I remembered where I'd left the bicycle." Now, relations between the Jewish and the Catholic clergy, say, have not always been as good as they are today. And I might say, on a passing serious note, that it is a remarkable thing to me, as a believing Jew, that I find often I have much more in common in the defense of the things that are really fundamentally important to me by reason of my faith with believing Catholics, Orthodox, and Protestants, say, than I do with some liberal members, used not in the Latin or European sense, but the American sense of my own faith. And that is because I think, for reasons to which our panel this morning adverted, and we will doubtless hear more over time, the conceits of the modern age put directly into jeopardy that which all of us in the Judeo-Christian tradition hold most important. In any event, there was a time many centuries ago, back in the 1,000 years of nothing, when there was a dispute at Verona. It turned out that the town of Verona in Italy, which had been the comfortable home of obviously both a Catholic community and a Jewish community, was growing to the point where the community was pressing up against the walls of the city. And the leader of the Catholic community, the Bishop of Verona, gave some thought to this and decided that the only way to gain relief for the pressures within the walls was to invite the Jewish community of Verona to move outside the walls and colonize the surrounding farmland. So he went to see the Rabbi of Verona and made this proposal. And the Rabbi of Verona said, "Nothing doing. Either we all stay inside the walls or we go outside the walls together, but you're not going to push us outside the walls." Well, this debate raged back and forth in Verona. Of course, it was getting no resolution there. And finally, the bishop said to the rabbi, "Look, I'll tell you what. Why don't we take this dispute down to Rome? Why don't we debate it before the Pope and get his advice?" And the rabbi, knowing that the Pope of the day was a just and reasonable man, assented to this. So off they went, the Bishop of Verona and his supporters and the Rabbi of Verona and his supporters, and they went to Rome. And the Holy Father organized a debate. The only forum large enough to seat everybody who wanted to witness it was the Colosseum. So there they assembled on the appointed day in the Colosseum in Rome, the Pope in the chair. Now, of course, that was a time before the development of sound systems, and boom boxes, and the other accoutrements of modern civility. And the two debaters, the bishop and the rabbi, would naturally have a hard time making themselves heard throughout the room, so it was throughout the Colosseum. So it was decided that the debate would take place entirely by gesture. And here now I must apologize to those of you who are, as it were, pilloried. Rhymes with stuck someplace you can't see easily. But I am about to report on that debate, and I apologize, but I must obviously replicate the gestures that were used in the debate. So the debate opens, the Pope recognizes the Bishop of Verona. The Bishop of Verona stands up and says, sits down. The Rabbi of Verona stands up and says, sat down. The Bishop of Verona got up and said, the Rabbi of Verona answered with a single-digit gesture. It was not the one made famous by George Bush. By the way, I know a socialist economist who favors using Roman numerals for accounting governmental inflation, because he points out if you did that, 100% inflation would still be in a single digit. Now, the rabbi replied to the bishop saying, at that point, the bishop reached into his cloak, took out an apple, took a bite of the apple. The rabbi stood up, reached into his cloak, took out a piece of unleavened bread, bit a piece of the unleavened bread. At that point, the bishop broke down, weeping, fled from the Colosseum, declaring that he had lost and granting victory to the rabbi. Now, just outside the Colosseum, the bishop's supporters gathered round and they said, Your Excellency, what happened? And the bishop said, the rabbi was brilliant, just brilliant. He beat me at every turn, answering me in my own terms. I opened up by recurring to first principles, and I said, God is everywhere. And the rabbi replied, I said, but God is here. I pointed out, God is three persons. The rabbi replied, but one God. I brought forth the apple of Eden to remind everyone of original sin. The rabbi brought forth the bread of affliction and redemption to point out that there is an answer to original sin. Well, if he's besting me on these preliminaries, how can I possibly hope to beat him on a real estate question? Meanwhile, the rabbi's gone out the other entrance of the Colosseum, and his supporters gather around. They say, Rabbi, that was fantastic. What happened? And the rabbi said, well, you know, it's really peculiar. He said, the bishop opened up saying, get out of town. I replied, no, we're going to stay in Verona. The bishop then said, look, we'll give you 3 days. I said, oh, come on, give us a week. And then we broke for lunch. Now, before I get to the point of all this, I have one more point of Episcopal-Judaic relations to relate, and this is true. Some years ago, shortly on the eve of my departure from my hometown for the Reagan administration in Washington, the rabbi of my congregation was also leaving to take a new pulpit. And I have to confess to you that although I am and have for many years have been a Chicagoan, and I belong to a synagogue in Chicago, I have also retained my membership in the little synagogue where I grew up and my grandfather helped found almost 100 years ago in Gary, Indiana. And I was the chairman of the pulpit committee of our synagogue in Gary, Indiana, as we were having a gala farewell service of Thanksgiving to say goodbye to our departing rabbi, and we invited the clergy of Gary, leading clergy of Gary, to come to the service. And there attended a man I knew all my life. Alas, he just died recently. He was the first Roman Catholic bishop of the Diocese of Gary, which was established right around the time I was born, Andrew Gregory Grutka, a sweet man. And as we stood in the library of the temple, which was being used as a robing room before the service, he said, "I understand you're leaving town. You're going off to join President Reagan. What are you going to do?" I'm going to be the general counsel of OPM, I said, the Office of Personnel Management, the chief lawyer for the bureaucracy. And Bishop Grutka said to me, "Well, you know, in the church, we too have a bureaucracy." He said, I want to tell you a story. He said, I was so impressed with Signore Martino in his remarks last night that I apologize in advance that my Italian is not nearly as good as his. But the bishop of Gary told me the following story. He said, one day the Holy Father was sitting at his desk in the Apostolic Palace. And suddenly the doors burst open and in ran the dean of the College of Cardinals, Carlo Cardinal Confalieri, breathless, flushed. And he said to the Holy Father, "Oh my gosh, Holy Father, it's finally happened. He's here right now. Jesus Christ riding a little donkey across to the Piazza Vaticano on his way here to the Apostolic Palace. Oh my goodness, Holy Father, what are we going to do?" And the Pope thought for a moment and he replied, "Look busy." Well, the time has come for me to look busy and get down to work. I am amazed. Stan Evans said just a few minutes ago, you all heard him, that if I went to my room and I looked, I'd find a Bible. And sure enough, I did. I don't know how he got it in there. But there it was. And I, ladies and gentlemen, am not Bill Clinton. Therefore, this is not a mere prop. But I want to recur. In fact, I mean, this is stunning because I had planned to do this even before this morning's panel. This morning's panel helps me shorten this considerably. I simply want now to go directly to 1 Samuel chapter 8, verse 7, and tell you what was really bothering God when my people opted for human kingship. It was a big mistake, and if you want, I am here to apologize to you all. And the Lord said unto Samuel, "Hearken unto the voice of the people in all that they say unto thee. For they have not rejected thee, Samuel, but they have rejected me, that I should not reign over them." Now, that was the mistake. Even more important than the costs directly imposed by government, there is, in a sense, the opportunity cost that we incur when we delude ourselves and think that our God is the state. Our God is not the state. Our God is God. And in understanding that distinction, it's all the difference in the world. I must point out, however, that not all of my ancestors were capable of making those mistakes. I am much indebted to Adam Puzan, who in the creating and broadening of toward tradition, and Adam is here today, in the creating and broadening of toward tradition, he has sort of played Robin, the boy wonder, to Rabbi Daniel Lapin's Batman. In pointing out to me, and you can find it for yourself in Genesis 41, the interesting report that Joseph, when he was made prime minister of Egypt under Pharaoh as a result of his very successful dream interpretation and his laying down a proposal of public policy to address an impending famine, was confronting a situation where, as we know from the story of the baker's dream, Pharaoh took one-third of all of the production of the realm. And interpreting interpreting Pharaoh's dream, you may recall Joseph's prescription was the following. It is, you can find it at Genesis chapter 41, verse 34. Let Pharaoh do this, Joseph said. Let him appoint officers over the land and take up the fifth part of the land of Egypt in the seven plenteous years. You will recognize that going from a tax of one-third to a tax of one-fifth is a marginal tax rate reduction. Joseph was history's first supply sider, and the rest is manifest success. Well, this society, if it stands for no other proposition, it stands to remind everyone of Richard Weaver's famous maxim, indeed book title, Ideas Have Consequences. And what a stunning perversion of that insight we have seen in the wake of the great tragedy at Oklahoma City. I suspect I was not alone this morning in being struck when I heard Professor Peden say the following, and I'm quoting here verbatim from Professor Peden, quote, "Can any 20th century citizen deny the demonic nature of the state?" End quote. He said, and I quote, "Christianity begins as an outlaw band." End quote. Imagine what the Clintonites would do with Professor Peden's remarks in trying to justify a suspension of civil liberties in the wake of the tragedy in Oklahoma City. You all understand to what I am adverting. Well, look, if this is now, these are now to be the terms of debate in this country, if we are now to make these kinds of reaches in laying at the feet of those who propound ideas consequences so remote, so irrelevant, so unconnected as the acts of these petty tyrants, as Jameson campaign calls them, wool hat socialists who blew up the federal building in Oklahoma City. Well, does this mean then that we are justified in saying in response that half a century and more of liberal politics, social prescriptions, statist interventions that have taught people that the good life is theirs as a matter of right, that there is no connection between what you get and how much work you do, that if you do not have and possess everything you want to have and possess, it is because it has been wrongfully denied to you by an unjust society, that we can then say that every one of the thousands of murders that occurs every year in this country as thugs invade people's homes and hold up 7-Elevens to get what they want should be laid at the feet of the liberal establishment, socialist academics, and the editorial pages of the New York Times? Okay. Fair enough. Well, let me close, in fact, on a serious note. You know, we Jews observe a new holiday. We just observed it 2 days ago. When I say a new holiday, I mean in the Jewish calendar of holidays, the last time we added one, the hitherto youngest Jewish holiday, was Hanukkah, which, you know, reading the book of Maccabees and what we call the Apocrypha, the books of the Maccabees and the Apocrypha, is the story of the rebellion of the Maccabees and their redemption, the rededication of the temple in Jerusalem, and so forth. That was the newest holiday added to the Jewish calendar. The other ones, the Pentecost, the Passover, the Day of Atonement, the Jewish New Year, and so on, these are ancient biblical holidays going back to the Pentateuch, and so forth, much older than Hanukkah. But Hanukkah, 2,000-some years old, was our youngest holiday until the last few years. And the Jewish world often has a hard time agreeing on a lot of things these days. But one thing that virtually every movement in Judaism around the world has done is to recognize a new religious holiday that commemorates the Shoah. We call it Yom HaShoah, the Day of Remembrance of the Holocaust. Because the Holocaust was an event of biblical proportions in our time. There are people in this room who witnessed an event of biblical proportions moving still through human history. It is very important in the midst of such a horrible and terrifying event of biblical proportions to get it right, and there are two aspects of it that need to be gotten right. The first is to understand what this work was, what was going on here. This was an act of tyranny, of totalitarianism, driven by the ideas that are at the core of national socialism, international socialism, that reject God and reject the fundamentals of the Western civilization, which have at their core the teachings of Jews and Christians and Muslims. The second thing we must not do is to say that this was God abandoning us. This was human terror, human sin, visited upon us as it has been since biblical antiquity, over and over and over again. And what we must remember in the ashes of this tragedy, the ashes of the Shoah, as in the ashes of Oklahoma City, now is not the time to turn our backs on God and wonder where he is. Now is the time to turn God, look to see him in the face, and embrace him with all our hearts.
Thank you very much, Joe. Reed Lawson would be remiss not to remind ourselves that it was Joe Morris, along with Donald Devine and Roger Pilon, who, in their office in August 1981, helped bring to a screeching halt the dominance of the trade union movement, and in particular the airline pilots, air controllers activity, and that has been a major contribution to our economic growth in the almost 15 years since then. And we thank you very much, Joe, for that great contribution, maybe the greatest of the Reagan administration. Tim Wheeler wishes us to be aware that he has copies of photographs and some of the articles written by Bill Rickenbacker. And if you're interested, you can see Tim about those. Our next session begins promptly at 2 p.m. back where we were meeting this morning. Thank you very much.